Welcome to the Heal, Nourish, Grow podcast. I'm Cheryl McColgan, founder of Heal, Nourish, Grow. The website, this show, and our newsletter all focus on making the science of advanced nutrition and greater overall health accessible to everyone. Buckle up for our latest episode to get ideas, tools, and practical knowledge you can use to improve your health and move towards your perfect version of ultimate wellness. The Heal, Nourish, Grow podcast shares interviews with nutrition experts, health researchers, and everyday people that have changed their lifestyle and nutrition to support greater health. You'll learn how to implement lasting change and create new habits that support greater wellness and a happier, healthier life. Please visit healnourishgrowpodcast.com for full show notes and links to our guests.
Don Moxley is the Director of Applied Science at Longevity Labs, Inc. and developer of HRV Plus from Mode and Method. Dedicated to helping people live vibrant, fulfilling lives at all ages, Moxley draws upon his career as an athlete, a sports scientist, and an instructor to lead and educate on the science of autophagy and longevity. Don is regarded as a human performance and longevity leader known for making the complex simple. Throughout his life and career, Moxley has applied science to enhancing well-being. A former captain and Big Ten champion at The Ohio State University, Don served as the university's first sports scientist. By giving athletes the ability to track their progress in strength, cardiovascular, and resilience, he helped the wrestling team win a national title and 3 Big Ten championships. He has helped athletes achieve Olympic medals, national championships, and has 23 All-Americans. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Heal, Nourish, Grow podcast. Today, I am joined by Don Moxley, and we just had a lovely little pre-interview chat all about our things in common. Don went to The Ohio State University, was a collegiate athlete, and is currently traveling around in an RV, which if anybody that's listened to this podcast before or read my blog will go back to the little thing that I call the Vagabond Adventure. We did that for a little bit in a Suburban, not an RV. But so lots in common. But what I'm really excited about is Don knows so many things about health and wellness and sports performance, and he's got some awesome things to share with us today. But before we go into all that, Don, if you could just share a little bit, I shared briefly about your background, but if you could go into some detail and, you know, how did you get into this work? What makes you passionate about health and wellness and what you're doing today?
It's a great question. And it's, and literally you can't separate the journey from the destination. It's so, I grew up, Cheryl, I grew up in Eastern Ohio. We grew up in the strip pits over in Belmont County, and I had every intention. I was a decent high school wrestler. I was, you know, I qualified for the state tournament twice, but never won a match there. But when I went to Ohio State with every intention of going home and feeding beef cattle for the rest of my life, but I got to Ohio State. I was good enough to walk on the wrestling team, but it was a struggle. I was injured all the time. And I was one of those wrestlers that used to cut a lot of weight. I cut from 220 to 177, and hence the injury problems. But when I finally, you know, I was injured my sophomore year, I'm thinking, okay, what do I have to do to finally get going? And I had this kind of unique interaction with several people in my life that basically said, you've got to get stronger. And now remember, Ohio State hired their first strength coach in 1977. This is 1982. So this is right there. And the strength coach worked with football. They didn't really know what wrestling was at the time. And so I started exploring, what does it take to get stronger? And then I found myself, Cheryl, sitting in one of my animal science classes, it was Animal Science Nutrition 661, non-ruminant nutrition, which is not a cow or a goat, but a pig. So it has a stomach like a human. And I'm thinking, well, if this is what we should be doing in farm animals, maybe this is what I should be doing for myself as an athlete. This is before we had sports nutrition as part of the athletic department. And I fell in love with it. I fell in love with human physiology. I wound up changing my life around. And from the standpoint, I went from a guy who couldn't get on the mat because I was injured all the time to where my last year I captained the team and wrestled really well and won a Big Ten title and was way more successful than I should have been. So that kind of started it. I finished up grad school shortly thereafter. I did my grad work in exercise phys. Started working as, you know, an early personal trainer. A friend of mine was working with the Chicago Bulls, and this is the Jordan Bulls back in the day. And they called me because Brad Sellers, who was the 7-foot center on the basketball team back then, and Dennis Hobson, who was the NCAA Player of the Year from Ohio State back then, went to play for the Bulls. And Al Vermeil, who now lives close to you there in Cincinnati, calls and says, hey, I need someone to train my guys. And so this was my first introduction to this kind of work. About the same time, I started working as a professor. I started teaching the exercise sciences there in Columbus at Columbus State Community College. And then that started a nearly a 30-year run as both a professor, working in small schools, teaching primarily, doing a little bit of research. But at the same time, I always kept a foot working with a stable of athletes. I also worked in the industry. So if you're into fitness and you don't own a heart rate monitor yet, you're kidding yourself. Go get one now. But I had a chance to work for Polar Electro, the company that makes the best version of that, which was just an eye-opening experience. Because, Cheryl, back then we were teaching people to measure their heart rate with two fingers on the carotid, which when you start to use tech, it's a joke. It's just an absolute joke. And so fell in love with, you know, started using tech to measure performance and do, work like that. So big change came in 2015. I get a call from the now wrestling coach at Ohio State, Tom Ryan. He says he's got an athlete that he's struggling with. And Cheryl, I'm one of these guys in my house. We lived in a little town outside of Columbus called Granville. And in my house, I had a human performance lab. I don't know why everybody doesn't have one. I had one. And Tom had been over the year before, and I'd helped him achieve some goals that he was trying to work on. And he says he's got an athlete that he's struggling with and brings this kid over. And this is 9 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday morning. And he had wrestled a dual meet at 6 o'clock at night on a Friday night. So had nothing really in between those two times. He comes in, we wire him up. I start to do the testing. It becomes immediately, to me, I immediately see this guy's heart rate variability measurement is horrible. It's essentially when he walks in on a Sunday morning, he has an HRV, which is a stress measurement response that's equivalent to someone being in a room when a lion walks through the door. It's a fully sympathetic response. And so we started talking about what's going on, and I did some testing, and I said to the coach, I said, listen, what your problem with this athlete is that he's maladapting to your training. He's not adapting, he's maladapting. And I said, you have to stop training him like you think you should train him and start training him in a manner that he's prepared for. And so stepped in, the team had a lot of things happening with it right then. This kid wound up turning himself around in the last, month of the season. We helped him achieve All-American status. Ohio State won a national title that year because we had four other tremendous wrestlers on that team. And so all of a sudden I'm at Ohio State. Tom says, I want you on staff. So I go working on back with the wrestling team as a sports scientist. In 2017, we measured 3.5 million data points on a wrestling team. We measured everything, and I ran correlations, and I was looking at what makes a difference, because so much of strength and conditioning and performance and nutrition and the adjunct fields, I say are dogmatic. They're more religious than they are science. Okay. And science means we measure the impact of everything we do. Is it positive? Is it negative? And again, with that athlete I was telling you about, Kenny, he was maladapting. And until we put a measurement in place that we could correlate workloads, recovery, things like that against, you're just going to run this kid in the ditch. So this is what we did with the team. We had a great run. I left Ohio State in 18. Largely because, and this is what can be the funny part of the story. while I'm at OSU, I have coaches calling me from around the country. Hey, what do you know about THC, cannabis, and HRV? I said, I don't know anything about it. I said, my guys are NCAA athletes. It's against the rules. When I had a really good friend that I worked with at a wearables company out now in New Mexico who had gone to work in cannabis, in Oregon, and he's sending me notes saying, "What do you see this?" And I'm looking at some of the research. I'm like, "Okay, this is really interesting." Well, he calls me one day. He says, "You want to work in cannabis?" And I said, "Yep, I need to understand this. I need to know what's going on." And he makes me an offer. It's the proverbial offer you can't refuse. Yeah. It tripled my pay from what I was making at Ohio State. So that was easy. But it meant I had to move to Florida. I moved down to South Florida. I lived in Palm Beach, Florida. And I tell people I was selling weed in South Beach. And you know, but I was the director of applied science for a medical cannabis brand down there. And the amount of learning that took place was epic. It was absolutely epic. And when you finally pierce the veil of cannabis and what's out there, the amount of knowledge and the amount of information is ridiculous. There's so much there. It's a legit field. And I tell people, you know, Cheryl, listen, I taught the exercise sciences for 35 years. The number one benefit of exercise, the number one thing we should teach, the chapter one of exercise 101, should be the enhancement of what's called the endocannabinoid system. It's part of your nervous system that's named after cannabis. You produce a molecule that's called anandamide. It's called the Zen molecule. It's what we go for. And we also produce a thing called BDNF, brain-derived neurotrophic factor, which catalyzes learning. Kids who exercise are smarter than kids who don't. And so, you know, today when someone asks you about health and wellness and all these things, and you say, well, you need to exercise, unfortunately, we've brainwashed people to think exercise is about losing weight, which is the worst goal in the world, worst. The benefit of exercise is that you produce anandamide, you produce BDNF, you do the things that you need to live a long life, you do the things that prevent you from ending your life too early. I should say. So that's an important part. So have my little stint down in Florida, just do an amazing amount of learning about cannabis. And one of the guys I worked with down there calls me one day and says, you know, what are you doing? And I said, well, I'm looking for a project. And he said, what do you know about autophagy? And I said, well, I have a passing understanding of it. I said, I don't have a deep understanding. He said, have you ever heard of a thing called spermidine? I'm like, nope, that's a new one to me. He sends me this TED talk from Austria that's all in German, so I've got to translate the whole talk. And I learn about this molecule called spermidine, and I was like, okay, this is really interesting. And I said, what do you want me to do? And he says, I want you to do the same thing for me that you did in Florida. I want you to teach people about these things. So 3 years ago, I went to work for a company called Spermidine Longevity Labs. We have a product called Spermidine Life. And the research shows that spermidine is critical in the autophagy process. And for your tribe that's listening, you can't address longevity, either health span or lifespan, without addressing autophagy. You cannot separate the two. And we now have research that shows that spermidine, this unique molecule, is critical in the autophagy pathway. It methylates some of the key genes that drive autophagy in the cell. So there's the short introduction, if you were looking for one. You know, starting off as an athlete, I always keep a stable of people that I work with. I've become expert in this area of heart rate variability, understanding stress, understanding how it impacts you. But at the same time, we've actually developed a product that if you go to a website called modemethod.com, you'll see a product there called HRV Plus. It's a cannabis and fish oil product that I developed that we sell through our company. And we also have the spermidines and things like that. We can talk about that more as we go.
Okay. First of all, Don, I am obsessed with your background. It's like right up my geeky little brain alley, everything that was in your background. College athlete as well, almost went into athletic training, ended up with a psychology degree. So I focus more on the brain part of the sports performance. But my goodness. So I just don't even know where to start. But since we're going to focus mostly on heart rate variability, I already feel like I need to talk to you again sometimes so we can go into some of the sports performance stuff, because there's just not enough time for all this wonderful knowledge. But you mentioned, I think one thing that could be useful for some people listening, and then we'll pop on to the HRV subject more deeply, but you mentioned way back that you were injured a lot in high school when you were an athlete. And I think a lot of us, you know, the now middle-aged, getting over 50 kind of thing, you know, our bodies certainly experience injuries more easily. Mm-hmm. And I think it might just be useful to know what you learned during that time that helped you become more resilient, because you went from being kind of injured, you said, in your sophomore year and always being hurt to, you know, winning and having a really successful senior season. So what was it that you did during that time? Was it nutrition? Was it the way that you trained? What combination of factors? I'd love to hear all about that.
It was all of the above. And as an athlete, you can't not look at everything, but the two major elements were, one, I stopped cutting weight. So, and again, you know, I'm at 6'1", I would start my first two seasons around 240, 250 pounds, 230, 250 pounds. And I would either cut to 177 or 190. I was the smallest person in my family. My younger brother, who was 5 years younger, is 6'9", you know, a biscuit over 340, you know, and a two-time state champ wrestling champion. I mean, a really talented wrestler too. Went on to play football at Ohio State. I had no business cutting weight like that. Huge mistake. Mm-hmm. Number one. Number two is, since I was cutting all that weight, and this is back, remember, we're starting this in the late 70s, early 80s. The whole concept of strength and conditioning has not really bought into the general, you know, milieu of the general public. And it was emerging. So we started learning about lifting. We started learning about that stuff. So number one, stop cutting weight. Number two, pay attention to the food that goes in your head. Where is it coming from? What's going on?
If you've been around my content for a while, you know that one of my favorite things is making and eating gourmet food and pairing it with wine. You might think you can't enjoy wine, though, while trying to lose weight or stay in ketosis. And if you're drinking traditional wine, you might be right. So many wines are mass-produced and full of sugar and other garbage additives that can wreak havoc on your health goals and just make you feel bad. Fortunately, I discovered Dry Farm Wines. I've been drinking their wine for years now, and I love this company. They individually test small batch wines produced by vintners that are committed to the practice of dry farm production. Some of my favorites have been the Blaufränkisch variety from Austria and all of the wines from the Loire Valley in France. Dry Farm wines are free from excess sulfites and mold that can cause adverse reactions and hangovers. With no added sugar, each wine is tested to be under 1 gram of sugar in the entire bottle. Yep, you just heard that right. There's less than one carb in the whole bottle of wine. They're also slightly lower alcohol, which means you can enjoy a delicious wine pairing at dinner any given night and not end up with a hangover. You can receive an extra bottle for just a penny with your first order by visiting dryfarmwines.com/healnourishgrow. I'd love to hear what your favorite wine is after you try it, and be sure to tag me on social with pictures of your wine and delicious dinners. Again, that bottle of wine for a penny is at dryfarmwines.com/healnourishgrow.
You know, college kids, you know, they've got a hot furnace and they can burn about anything that goes into it. When you reach 40, 50, 60 years old, it's not quite the same. You're not burning quite as hot. So you got to pay. But the other thing that we've really, that has really come to really, you know, inform my position lately is the role of micronutrients. Cheryl, so much of our nutritional information is based on the macros, proteins, carbohydrates, fats, and water. And that, listen, that's fine. I don't want to minimize that at all. But when you start talking about longevity, we're talking about micronutrients, and we spend more time talking about things like spermidine and NAD and nitric oxide and again, the micronutrients that will be in our food. But to go back and answer your question, you got to look at everything. Stop cutting weight. I became an absolute gym rat. Spent a lot of time in the weight room, and I went to where I didn't lift, to where by the time I was finishing up my summer cycle in 1985, so I was probably, this would have been August, late August, early September, 1985. my last workout happened to be the most. So I doubled in the squat 840 pounds, and the next day I doubled in the bench 480 pounds. So I went from didn't lift to was a gym rat and really strong, which was my superpower wrestling. I was able to convert that into wins. And fell in love with the field. I just fell in love with exercise phys and all those things that go with that. So that was the transition. And this is one of the big challenges for athletes. Can you move? You know, most athletes in college were pretty good athletes in high school. Their challenge is, can they make the transition to the stress load of the collegiate demand and not break? Okay. This, you know, cause it's injury that ends your career. It's injury that finishes that you don't make it. So literally everything you have to do has to be about resilience, building resilience. In fact, when I lecture on this now, I talk about the physiological aspect of performance. And the first thing, you've got to be able to move. So you got to have, you know, functional movement capabilities. Once you have functional movement capabilities, you add strength to that. There's no use adding strength to bad movement. Okay, because it just doesn't work. You got to get good movement first. Add strength to that. Build your ability to produce energy. Understand cardiovascular work. Understand your electron transport system, your ability to produce ATP, which is where it's all at, which consequently, those first three things apply directly to longevity as well. If you want to live a long life, and when you get to 60, 70, 80, 90 years old, you have to be able to move, because if you can't move, you fall, break a hip, and die. You have to be strong. If you're not strong, you fall, break a hip, and die. We don't die when we run out of energy, when we run out of time. We die when we run out of energy. So everything's got to be about mitochondrial performance, that part of the cell that makes energy. And then finally, I've added a fourth element to that physical, and it's resilience. Your ability to withstand stress. Have it be a eustress, a positive stress, not a distress. Your ability to do that and recover, this applies to a college athlete. This applies to that college athlete's parents. This applies to that college athlete's grandparents. That line is very consistent. And so, you know, it's taken me now, 40 years to kind of get on top of this. The first part, though, was stop doing stuff that hurt me. And, you know, there's a lot of athletes that need to do that. There may be distance athletes that just get off on putting in the miles. But if they're creating so much cortisol and they're creating, you know, challenges there, you've got to make sure that what you're doing has a payback. You know, I probably 5 years ago, I feel like I've stopped looking at performance physiologically, and I start looking at it now economically. Okay. Economics is about return on investment. What do I put time into and what do I get back in return? Well, so much training, when someone's going in the gym every day and just burying themselves, they may, you know, there's a dopamine hit on that. There, you know, there's no doubt that they feel good, but they're paying a physiological price. And you can't ever forget that. So, you know, this is part of the challenge as we work our way through this. Can I move? Am I strong? Can I produce energy? And do I have resilience? That's very much a human guideline from athletics through aging.
Yeah, I wish that this is something that I would have learned much earlier in my life, because I still think that my body is suffering / recovering from 17 years of distance running, which if I would have just put all of that time and energy into weight training, I'd be in a much better place now. But
and when you did your distance training, did you wear a heart rate monitor?
Of course I did. I had the Polar. I had the one that went around your chest, the very old school one. I'm all about the geeky technology. For sure.
But the thing is, and what drives me crazy, Cheryl, is the number of people that I see training at elite college levels that are not wearing a heart rate monitor. And I don't think there is a single piece of equipment that's more valuable. I think it's the single. And when you understand physiology and you understand zone 3, zone 4, and zone 5, what you get and what it costs you to train in each one, most of us train in zone 4 because that's where we feel it. It's also the zone that we pay the biggest price in. So this is, and this, whether you're a distance runner or whether you're a college wrestler, energy is still the same. And you can never forget
that. I love this. And it's such a, I mean, it's such a simple tool. And now, you know, heart rate monitors are much less expensive than they used to be. And it's a perfect thing to really enhance your training without a lot of money. So that being said, you mentioned some things already about the heart rate variability. And I really wanted to get into this a little more deeply because it's something that I've been looking into more lately. And, you know, some of the research on it that I've seen basically says that it's, you know, it's, you can't tell if it's causative because they can't do a study like that, right? They can't wait till we die and see what our heart rate was and if it was related, but it's highly related to mortality, all cause mortality. And you were probably way better on the research than I am. Well, so I'd love to hear your thoughts around that.
We know the moment before you die, your HRV will be zero. Okay. I know my Olympians are greater than 100. In that particular measurement that they take. And there's lots of measurements. We're not going to go down the deep HRV rabbit hole, but that one that we see with most products, we're all in between. Okay. And you're always wanting to push HRV away from zero. Okay. Now, it's not like blood pressure where everybody falls in this relatively tight window. It's not like that. And it's very individual and it's something that you got to pay attention to. But it's a relatively new variable. You know, we when I was working for Polar now almost 30 years ago, they were integrating HRV technology into their wrist-worn products because we didn't have cell phones were just coming on the market. Smartphones weren't out yet. We were still using Nokias and flip phones and things like that. But now we carry a computer lab in our pocket with our cell phones. And with good Bluetooth, these things connect and talk to each other. So we're walking around with the lab and we're learning more about HRV every day. We're able to go in, and for your audience, let's talk about HRV for just a moment.
Heart rate. If you could define it, I think that'd be great because probably a lot of people are like, what are you even talking about?
So heart rate, is the number of times your heart beats a minute. So if your heart beats every second, you have a 60 beat per minute heart rate. But with heart rate variability, it changes and it's variable. So instead of being beat, 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 high variability sounds like this. Beep, beep, beep.
Like what you hear so far? Make sure you never miss a show by clicking the subscribe button now. We'd also love it if you could post a review on iTunes. It helps us so much by allowing others to more easily find us. The Heal, Nourish, Grow podcast wouldn't be possible without listeners like you. Thank you so much for your support. Now back to the show.
Beep, it's variable. It's still 60 beats a minute, but it's variable. And what we've learned, so the Russians were the first to really describe this in the early 60s. With their cosmonaut program. They had a cosmonaut that had an appendicitis while in space. And oh, no. They were able to diagnose the problem looking at heart rate variability off of a wired EKG they had on this guy. So the Russians really started to get on top of this. Finland, which is right next to Russia, it's kind of like junior Russia up there. Well, their tech is outstanding, and they had phenomenal cardiovascular training athletes. The Finns, Pablo Normi, and just their cardiovascular athletes are phenomenal. And they started to use, and by the way, that's where Polar's from. Polar is based up in northern Finland, close to a little town called Oulu, which is where Nokia was based. So it's like Silicon Valley of Europe. So this is where we started to see this technology come into wearable tech. And I saw some white papers come out of Polar back when I was working with them. I'm like, wow, this is interesting because, Cheryl, at the time, we were prescribing exercise. We would either do a maximal test, find out what your maximal heart rate was, or we would do the 220 minus your age and apply equations to that. And so that's how we would do it. And I've never been comfortable estimating down. I've never felt comfortable with that equation. But with HRV, we can measure the onset of cardiovascular benefit. Where does it start? And this is that zone 1, zone 2 area. and then we can estimate up. And this was, to me, this made a ton of sense. So I started looking at that technology. Now, with, and again, over the last 30 years, wearable technologies has gone through the roof. I mean, the amount of tech that's come. And I personally believe, look at you, yeah. I personally believe that it is your primary key performance indicator. When I look at one thing to measure health and performance, well, let me take it back to athletics. In 18, we qualified our entire starting lineup for the Nationals. 10 guys, first time in school history. We had 8 All-Americans, most in school history. I could have told you day one of the tournament, the 2 guys that would not make All-American because their HRV scores were too low. They did not have the resiliency necessary to win the 5 matches over 3 days that you have to win to be All-American. They didn't have it. My other guys did. And we were seeing this data emerge over about 3 years. So, and again, you can apply this to Joe Bag of Donuts, just waking up every day to go to work and make a life, and you want to live long. You know, it's been funny, Cheryl, that in the longevity space, I talk about the 3/3 of your life. You spend your first third learning. You're in school, you're growing, you're trying to figure out what you want to be. You spend the second third of your life earning in service to others. And so this is work. But, you know, we were talking before we started recording. My daughter moved out. We only have one child. My daughter moved out of our house 2 years ago. And I looked at my wife and I said, we're done. I said, she's not coming back. She's going to get a job and we're done. And we started our third third. We were empty nesters. It's now our third. It's what we want it to be. And I want my third third of my life to be as vigorous and fulfilling, if not more so, than the first 2/3. You know, I had a great first third. We enjoyed it as a great kid growing up. College was fun. My second third, being married for, my wife and I have been married for 33 years now, raising a child that you're proud of, does cool things. But now we're going into third third, and I want that to be vigorous. So I'm constantly looking at what's going on with HRV, because the more I can push that up, the farther I am away from zero, and the better off I am.
Yeah. And so since you brought that up, I mean, one of the things I think Oura Ring, a lot of people are familiar with this tool. And really, that's probably what finally got heart rate variability more seriously on my radar, because I'm imagining that my Polar, I had several iterations of it in all the years that I was running, and it must have had HRV. But for some reason, there wasn't the focus on it that there is now. And first of all, I'd love to have that baseline now, but I don't think that Polar would still have my data from like 30 years ago. So that being said, now I have this. And what I've started to observe are, you know, what kind of habits or that I have an effect on heart rate variability. Due to the research on this, I tell you, that is where I notice it the most.
It's time to talk more about what we're putting into our bodies. You won't believe what I've uncovered about some wellness products with collagen and coffee. Those seemingly harmless products might be loaded with heavy metals and pesticides like glyphosate. While it can be just a little or a lot in any given product, these toxins can accumulate in your body over time, wreaking havoc on your health. Even your go-to collagen brands might be sourcing from questionable places. Now let's move on to coffee. Most of us drink it every single day, but did you know it's one of the most pesticide-laden crops out there? And a lot of coffee is also riddled with mycotoxins, harmful substances produced by fungi. I know from experience, adjusting dietary habits can feel like a daunting task. I also know that's a driving factor for people coming to the podcast and visitors to the Heal Nourish Grow website. It's because, you know, I always delve into the health research so we can all thrive on our health journeys. That's why I want to introduce you to one of my best finds, Yonder Collagen and Coffee. It's a game changer for your daily routine. It was created by 2 amazing women who battled health issues and emerged triumphant. They spent 5 whole years researching and sourcing the cleanest, purest, and most potent coffee and collagen available. They use only 100% grass-fed, glyphosate-free collagen sourced from quality organic farmers, and it's a high potency formula that supports your skin, hair, nails, fascia, bones, joints, and gut health. Goodbye inflammation. In the coffee, it's a true innovation. It's 100% organic coffee infused with nootropic mushrooms like lion's mane and chaga, which makes a smooth, rich, and toxin-free delight. With over 600 milligrams of lion's mane and chaga per serving, it's awesome for your brain. They're also all about the planet. They source ethically, they work with organic family farms, and even give back to the planet by planting trees through the One Tree Planted initiative. Finally, their products meet the very strict California Prop 65 standards and FDA standards. You're getting the best of quality, safety, and performance in every sip. So if you're ready to reduce your daily toxin load, head over to healnourishgrow.com/yonderfood to learn more and use code CLEAN10 for 10% off your first order. That's healnourishgrow.com/yonder, Y-O-N-D-E-R, food, F-O-O-D, to learn more.
Honestly, and I think I've mentioned that before on the podcast. It's like, yeah, some nights I like my ring thinks I'm dead. So that, yeah, that's one of the huge contributors to poor heart rate variability. But I'd love it if you could share with people some of the other things that can affect it in both. Let's start with the negative, and then we'll bring it up to a higher note on what you can do to improve it.
Well, anytime that you're doing something that's going to create stress on the body, both internally and externally. And so I've had so many friends of mine come to me and say, thanks, you've ruined my drinking habits because my HRV. And I'm like, well, have you stopped drinking? And ironically, when I moved to Florida and was working in cannabis, I stopped drinking down there because I was looking at HRV. And if I decided I wanted to modify my personality, I would do it with cannabis. Because you wake up the next morning, you feel great. You're not, you know, and oh, by the way, it boosts your HRV if you do it right.
I always wondered about that. Good to know.
Now, it can lower it too if you do it wrong. But that's when it really affected me. I essentially stopped drinking when I moved into the cannabis field. So let's talk about what affects HRV. The number one driver of poor HRV scores is inflammation. Okay. So anything that you can do to lower inflammation will improve HRV. By the way, alcohol consumption, pretty big driver of inflammation. Bad food, you know, we talked a little bit coming on that you're very much into the keto lifestyle. Yes, ketogenics, if you're producing ketone bodies, you're probably lowering inflammation. Those are all good practices. We talked about the variability. Well, the more time that I can put between heartbeats, the more opportunity I have for variability. So improving cardiovascular fitness. So being a former runner, I've got a feeling yours is down in the high 40s, low 50s, your nighttime resting heart rate.
It was 48 last night.
There you go. So you're fit. You probably got a VO2 greater than 55, 60 in that range right now, which is a really good place to be. I talk to a lot of people and they'll have a nighttime resting heart rate of 75. And they may be exercising, but they're not doing the cardiovascular work that they need to build the mitochondria to drive the electron transport system to do the things that you need for that low resting heart rate and high variability. That just tells you there's resilience there. There's a place you can work. So lower inflammation, improve cardiovascular fitness, get to that. But one of the number one drivers of poor HRV is poor sleep. When you look at things like depression and you look at a lot of these health problems, they're so aligned with poor sleep. In fact, the one wrestler that I was telling you about, one of the first things we had to do was I had to fix his sleep environment. And you know, it was, so we could wire these guys up for 24, 48 hours at a time. And I'm looking at his nighttime sleep. And I said to him, I said, so your girlfriend's living with you. He goes, yeah. And I said, I kind of need you sleeping in a bed by yourself. I said, I don't care what you do before you go there. I just want to get your business done and get into a bed by yourself. Girlfriend was not happy with me at all. Kid turns around, makes all American. All of a sudden, everything takes care of itself, right? So sleep is critical. You know, Cheryl, I don't know if you've ever talked about it on your podcast. There's a thing called sleep divorce, where couples will choose to sleep in different beds. This is a wonderful practice to figure out what does it take. And, you know, we were talking before, my wife and I live in an RV now. So we have a king size. I don't have two beds in this place. I have one. We have a king size Sleep Number bed. But one of the little tricks we've learned is we have that Sleep Number bed. We put a regular king size fitted sheet on the bed, but then we use separate sheets and blankets for she and I. So if I turn over, I'm not pulling her blanket off and things like that. So this is just a little trick we've picked up along the way that just improves our sleep environment. So that person in bed with you is not waking you up. And respecting that person that's in bed with you, you know, if listen, and the thing that we cannot gloss over, trauma is a bitch. Okay. Trauma is rough. And, you know, when I was in Florida, this was one of the biggest learnings I had. So I go down there with this great background in HRV. And then I go down and I learn about this, what's called an endocannabinoid, a cannabinoid that your body makes called anandamide. We talked about a little bit of gorilla, the Zen molecule. But in your brain, you have a fear sensing organ that's called the amygdala. Okay. In dogs and in mice, if you fear condition them, you put them in a cage and shock them to where they become fearful. And then if you harvest their amygdala and measure, there's a drop of anandamide that does not come back. Okay. That this is, and if you think about Vietnam veterans, when we took kids from the States and we dropped them in Vietnam, the closest thing you can get to a snake pit that there is, it's just about pure survival, because remember that HRV system is about helping you survive. Okay. If you're born in a rattlesnake pit, the only way you survive is through hypervigilance. Okay. You've got to be vigilant all the time. If I take you out of the rattlesnake pit and I put you in a house full of bunny rabbits, you're still vigilant. Okay. It doesn't come back. Okay. So when you're looking at HRV and someone with chronically low HRV, you have to pay attention to trauma. And so this is where, listen, you talked about getting your degree in psychology, understanding breathing, I don't think the anandamide comes back to the amygdala. Once you have the hypervigilance, that's you. It's part of your existence. But recognizing your environment, knowing that meditation is critical, knowing that you won't naturally recover, you've got to plan your recovery the same way you plan your training. If I'm going to train for 30 minutes today, I'm going to get 10 minutes of breathing and meditation in the morning and 10 minutes of breathing and meditation at night. That's going to drive the recovery side of the HRV. So let me go back and recap. We talked about the fact, lower inflammation, do whatever you can when it comes to diet, exercise, things like that. Number two, exercise in a manner that's going to boost the amount of time between heartbeats, improve cardiovascular fitness, improve mitochondrial performance. These are all critical. Number three, fix the sleep environment. Have to fix the sleep environment. Number four, pay attention to what's going on with trauma and stress in your life and begin to engage in behaviors to counteract that. Those are four key elements you should start to take a look at to improve HRV.
Well, and since you mentioned that lowering inflammation is part of this, and as you mentioned, most people know, you know, ketones are very anti-inflammatory, promoting all that good stuff. So that's one way to do it. But I kind of wonder if some of that benefit in lowering inflammation is not only because ketones are a signaling molecule, but maybe also because it promotes autophagy. And since that's one of your favorite topics as well, I'd love if you could just talk a little bit about autophagy, because you mentioned the spermidine, and mm-hmm. I have not done a ton of reading on that yet. And I'm going to imagine that probably most of the audience here has not either, and maybe hasn't heard you speak before. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on that molecule, because it sounds like it's something that you can take either as an adjunct to a healthy thing, or maybe to counteract some things that you don't do as well, like get that in there. And then maybe promote these anti-inflammatory properties through autophagy, through some of the other things that you mentioned.
So let's talk about autophagy for a minute. So autophagy, it's also called autophagy, self-eating. The Latin is self-eating. And what we know is that this is an evolutionarily preserved process in all animals, okay? That You know, most people fast, but they don't know why they fast. Well, fasting is a relic that's in every major religion in the world. People who fast are healthier than people who don't. Well, the reason is that when we're eating and we have food available the whole time we're up, we're constantly sending signals to our cell through insulin production and IGF that say build, keep building. But when we fast, what we do is we cut down on that signaling. And all of a sudden, we don't have that signaling going to the cell, and the cell says, ah, what's going on? Maybe we need to clean ourselves up a little bit. And when your cell is making, when a cell is doing what cells do, it's usually making proteins. Okay, this is what cells do.
Have you taken the time to visit healnourishgrow.com? There are so many amazing resources there, lots of links and discounts and articles and all sorts of things that can help you on your health and wellness journey. Right now, you can get our free happiness workbook or a free summer salads mini cookbook.
But not all proteins are made correctly. And this is important because if it's not made correctly, it'll just sit there in the cell and will be unproductive. And if you think about a disease like Alzheimer's, there's a buildup of tau plaques. These are proteins in the neurological cells. Okay. What we know is that when you engage in fasting and you boost autophagy, you clean the cells, you lower inflammation, and you improve longevity. There's a great book called Blue Zones. And when you look at the blue zones, fasting's part, they raise their own food, which is really important. They manage stress very well. They're not looking at iPhones 24/7. They have spermidine rich diets, this crazy molecule called spermidine. We've known about spermidine for hundreds of years. The guy that invented the microscope described a crystalline structure in his semen. Now, this brings a whole nother question is, why didn't we give the microscope to a woman instead of this guy? because we would have been much farther along now if we had. But it didn't get named for another 200 years. A group of Dutch scientists named it spermidine. There's sperm and semen. This structure was in there. Let's call this spermidine. All through the early 20th century into the 80s, the 1980s, we were looking at it. They thought it was cancer related. They could never figure it out. But in 2016, we gave a Nobel Prize to a Japanese researcher who described the genetics of autophagy. This was really important. And when we start to understand the genetic triggers to autophagy, a researcher in Graz, Austria, by the name of Dr. Frank Madeo, Frank started looking at using spermidine extracts with senescent cells. So a senescent cell is kind of like a zombie cell. It's no longer duplicating anymore. It's still alive, but it's not doing what cells do. It's just existing. Throws off inflammatory markers. It's kind of like the apple that ruins the bunch, right? It gets bad. Well, Frank started treating senescent cells with spermidine and reversed the senescence. We keep looking at this, and all of a sudden, spermidine, we used to refer to it as a calorie restriction mimetic. It mimics fasting. Well, we have a paper coming out anytime right now that basically shows it's not just a mimetic, it's critical. So some of the other mimetics to fasting, we've heard of resveratrol. This is what Dr. Sinclair talked about in his book on longevity. Resveratrol works through the what's called the sirtuin genes and boosts autophagy that way. We've probably heard of metformin. It's a diabetic drug that is being studied as a longevity drug. So it works through another pathway that's called the AMPK pathway, which is the same pathway that exercise impacts. When you exercise, you engage the AMPK pathway and it drives autophagy. And then finally, there's a third mimetic in there that's called rapamycin, which is an antibiotic that they found on Easter Island that blocks a protein protein production called mTOR. So when you block mTOR, it boosts autophagy. But with all of these other mimetics, what we're starting to see with some of our most recent research, and we're talking research that's been done in the last 12 months, is that spermidine is critical for all those other pathways to work. And this is what's really important. So we extract, so I work for a company called Longevity Labs. We have a product called Spermidine Life. It is an extract from wheat, European wheat germ. So we get ours from wheat germ in Europe. We can't find wheat germ in the United States that we can harvest spermidine from. It's so low. In fact, in Europe, we go out and buy wheat germ, spermidine-rich wheat germ. We bring it into the factory. We test it again, and we reject nearly 70% of what we buy and bring in because it's not rich enough. So we get the really good spermidine-rich, and that's what we run our extraction process on. So spermidine is a molecule that in the absence of spermidine, you don't get autophagy, whether you're fasting or exercising or anything else. This is going to be the important part of what comes out of this most recent research. So it's kind of like vitamin C. We didn't know about vitamin C until, you know, in 1492, what'd we do? We sailed the oceans blue. We put a bunch of people on boats in Portugal. We sent them across the Atlantic Ocean. They go into the Caribbean. This is Columbus's journey. Do you not look, you know how long it took Columbus to get across on that journey? 33 days. 33 days. But 100 years after that, by 1592, we're in the age of piracy. And people are living on boats for extended periods of time, years at a time. And they developed a condition called scurvy, which is a breakdown of cell walls that's related to a lack of vitamin C in the diet. So this is the reason they started carrying limes on boats. And the British sailors, they called them limeys because they had limes on them. But the people on the boat that didn't need the limes, the sailors that ate the rats, okay? The sailors that ate the rats make their own vitamin C. And if you ate the rat on the boat, you didn't get scurvy. So this is understanding micronutrients and going clear back to the beginning of our conversation, the role of micronutrients. We've started to see this development of these vitamins, and that we have a whole list of them now. We fully expect spermidine to have vitamin status at some point in time, that you have to make a dedicated effort to add it to your diet, or else you're not able to run all the physiological processes that lead to long life, good health span, good lifespan.
Now, is spermidine a compound that your body can manufacture in any way, or is this something that is required to get from our diets?
It looks like it's required to get from the diet, particularly as you age. So it needs to come from food sources. You know, our product is a food extract. It's a natural food extract. So when we look at people who live in blue zones, their diets are high spermidine diets. You know what, Cheryl, when we grew up on the farm in Eastern Ohio, we had 2 1-acre gardens that we fertilized with our barn, and the tomatoes and the beans and the corn that came out of that garden were ridiculous. Okay. I've never eaten anything like it since. Okay. You can't get tomatoes like that even at Whole Foods. Okay. They just don't have them. And so if you're raising your own food, that's a different story. But when we live in an industrial food environment, which we all do, we have to take a look at, okay, what's the impact of that? And what are the extra micronutrients that I need to get into my system? One of them is spermidine. You know, one of the other ones that we're going to start talking about a lot is NAD, nicotinamide adenine dinucleotide, which is critical in energy production. We actually just created a supplement for that too. So, you know, it's this balance between industrial produced food versus what's critical for good health span, lifespan.
Yeah, and that's such a, you know, that's a whole separate topic about how our industrialized food is not supporting our health any longer, and how deficient so many foods are in all kinds of nutrients. And, you know, you just took me back to, I was a little girl on a farm in Louisiana, and those gardens and the orchard that we had there, it just doesn't exist anymore, unfortunately, unless, like you said, you're growing your own food. But, you know, we had our pigs and our cattle. So yeah, it was all fertilized very well and very naturally. So we don't get that.
And did you suck the juice out of the head of the mud bug?
Yeah, that I still never got into. People definitely love that down there, no doubt about it.
There's got to be some nutrients in there. I hope so.
Well, yeah, brain has a lot of nutrients. People are afraid to eat brains, but it definitely has some good health promoting things.
Sure.
So, whole nother topic. Well, Don, so since we mentioned your company, I just want to say the name again, Longevity Labs. And you shared with me before the podcast that we'll have a code for everyone that you can get 15% off. So yep. I'll create, what I usually do is I create a special link and I'll just say it here now so that people that listen to this will have this all set up when you hear the episode. It'll be healnourishgrow.com/longevitylabs. And that will send you to the link where you can get some of the products that Don discussed today, if that's of interest. But if people want to follow you personally, or I don't know if you share about any of your RV adventure online or anything like that, but if people want to get in touch or find you, what is the best way to do that?
So if you want to get in touch with me, the best way to do that is through LinkedIn. I accept nearly all of my invitations on LinkedIn, unless the invitation says, hey, the system put us together. You look like a nice guy. I don't do I usually nuke those. If you send a note, say, hey, I heard you on the Heal, Nourish, Grow podcast. I'd like to talk to you. I wind up having conversations with lots of people talking about HRV, what you can do. So I still consult on that. So LinkedIn's a great place to go. I used to push a lot of information through Twitter. Who knows where Twitter's at now? I'm still there. I'm not pushing nearly as much information there. I am on Instagram. When we started the nomadic journey, I was putting a bunch of stuff up there. I've slowed down dramatically. I'm not sure the world needs another person talking about where they're at. But if you, again, getting a hold of me, if you want to learn more about Spermidine, you can go to spermidinelife.us. That's important, spermidinelife.us. And if you want to learn more about HRV Plus, the product that we developed for improving HRV, that's at modemethod.com, modemethod.com. That's where that's at. So I'm sure we'll put all this in notes. But that's the best way to get me.
Okay, awesome. Well, I have thoroughly enjoyed this conversation, and you are welcome back at any time to discuss any of these topics, because this was so much fun and I just love all the knowledge that you shared today. So thanks again for joining us.
We're going to have to do little amplets, you know, and break it all down.
Perfect. All right. Thanks, Don.
Thanks. Have a great day.
You too.
This has been the Heal, Nourish, Grow podcast. Again, I'm Cheryl McColgan, founder of Heal, Nourish, Grow. You can find show notes for this episode at healnourishgrowpodcast.com. If you have feedback on today's episode or questions about the content, please email us at podcast@healnourishgrow.com. We'd love to hear from you. Be sure to sign up for our email list at healnourishgrow.com and subscribe to the show with your favorite podcast player so you never miss an episode. Join us next time for more information that helps you live your best and healthiest life. Thanks for listening. Content on the Heal, Nourish, Grow podcast does not constitute medical advice. Content contained in the Heal, Nourish, Grow podcast is not intended as medical diagnosis or treatment. Neither the company nor its owner, Heal, Nourish, Grow, LLC, nor any of the company's employees, agents, or guest speakers provide medical advice. The content provided on Heal, Nourish, Grow podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only. Please consult your medical provider with any questions about what health practices are right for you.